Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show podcast on the Cross Global Media Radio Network. Visit cgmradio.com/Bob to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Today will be a pop culture edition. And speaking of today, the Walt Disney Company has very serious problems. In fact, they're a nightmare. But I have already done several shows about current Disney. Today, I want to offer the other side. I want to make sure that despite the state of film and television in the present, with its woke agenda ruining just about every classic favorite we've ever had, the true artistic geniuses who began these companies long ago are never forgotten. I don't want their names to become smeared simply because those who inherited their companies were so irresponsible, mindless, and conformist. The original artists deserve to be honored. Now, to some degree, I have already done this with the person of Walt Disney himself. I have praised his vision, his creativity, his willingness to take risks, and his desire to march to the beat of a different drum, none of which represents today's woke Disney Corporation. And now, as a follow-up, I will continue to pay homage by talking about Walt Disney's most magnificent achievement, the film Mary Poppins. Obviously, this will be a movie review of an old film from 1964, but a movie that is still very popular, a movie that recently spawned a new sequel just a few years ago. We cannot talk enough about the classics, my friends, especially by comparison to what's being churned out today. Now, I should say, my film review is going to be very different from your average run-of-the-mill film review. I am going to read out loud a critical review of Mary Poppins, responding point by point myself, defending the movie. First, as a little bit of foundation, I will proactively mention just a few of the things I loved about the film. First of all, it's based on brilliant classic children's literature. Well-written children's literature is always brilliant, always classic. These were the novels of P.L. Travers, who incidentally resisted Walt Disney for years until finally agreeing to sell him the film rights. An excellent movie in its own right tells this fascinating story. It's called Saving Mr. Banks. However, with the movie Mary Poppins, Disney was combining all of his genres. He was originally famous for animation, of course. Snow White was the very first feature-length animated movie in 1937, literally blowing the minds of those who said it could never be done. But Walt had long since gone on to make classic live-action movies too, such as 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, The Swiss Family Robinson, so many others. Mary Poppins provides one of the best combinations between live action and animation you will ever see. And early in the 60s, he also pioneered robotic characters such as what you now see on the Pirates of the Caribbean, but he used them in film too. One such creation was featured as the robin that sets down and sings on Mary Poppins' hand. He also did stop-action animations such as Babes in Toyland's March of the Toy Soldiers, along with all kinds of other special effects. The list goes on and on and on. Mary Poppins uses them all. The film is well-written, humorous, intriguing, entertaining, and emotionally touching, with valuable lessons for parents who have forgotten what it is like to be a child. It plays like a box of magic devices where every item pulled out in sequence is more fantastic than the previous. Yes, this was Walt's greatest achievement. The critics agreed. Mary Poppins received a great deal of much-earned critical acclaim, but honors were not from critics alone. There was also the Academy Awards. Mary Poppins was the very first Disney movie to be nominated for Best Picture of the Year. It lost out to My Fair Lady. Movie musicals were still big in the 60s. But while not taking home Best Picture, Mary Poppins still won an impressive 5 Academy Awards. This included 2 awards for the Sherman Brothers, 1 for the musical score, and 1 for Best Song of the Year, Chim Chim Cheree. It also won for editing and special effects, effects that were first-rate and far ahead of their time, long before special effects could be done by computer. But perhaps Mary Poppins' most interesting award went to Julie Andrews. This was her first motion picture. She was already a stage actress, famous for playing the part of Eliza Doolittle on Broadway, alongside Rex Harrison in Lerner and Lowe's My Fair Lady. Yes, the same My Fair Lady whose later film version beat out Mary Poppins for Best Picture. The trivia gets even more interesting. Jack Warner of Warner Brothers hired Rex Harrison to reprise his Broadway role for the film My Fair Lady, but he wasn't sure Julie Andrews could make the transition from stage to screen. Walt Disney felt otherwise. He went backstage after a showing of Camelot, another Lerner and Lowe musical also starring Julie Andrews, and while backstage, he convinced her to play the role of Mary Poppins. Meanwhile, Audrey Hepburn was hired to play Eliza Doolittle. Now, Hepburn is a terrific actress and absolutely enchanting in the movie she is. I did like My Fair Lady. I liked it a lot. But Hepburn didn't do her own singing. Her voice was dubbed by Marnie Nixon, who also dubbed for Natalie Wood in West Side Story, the original version of West Side Story. When that was discovered, voting members of the Academy decided not to even nominate Audrey Hepburn. At least that was the rumor. That was the rumor of the reason. It gets even better. My Fair Lady not only wins Best Picture, it wins Best Actor for Rex Harrison, but Julie Andrews, who played opposite Rex in the stage version, wins Best Actress at the same Academy Awards for a different movie. Only in Hollywood. The film also stars Dick Van Dyke. He is my favorite entertainer of all time. He sings, he dances, he acts. He's hilarious at slapstick, and I say that as one who is not a big lover of slapstick. His sitcom, The Dick Van Dyke Show, is the best sitcom in the history of television. I won't say much about that show right now because I did talk about it at length in a previous podcast that you can still listen to. It's called 60s TV, The Fun, The Fantastic, The Flawed. But I will share one fun story. On my honeymoon, Dana and I visited Disneyland during one of its anniversaries. Dick Van Dyke was there along with Richard Sherman, the composer of Mary Poppins, one of the composers of Mary Poppins, along with his brother. What a treat to see Dick Van Dyke and Richard Sherman in person. Okay, that's a little of my own admiration for Mary Poppins, but not all of it. As I said, you're going to hear more from me as I primarily defend this movie today against another review. The review is called Things Only Adults Notice in Mary Poppins. It's written by a woman named Christine Leewag Dixon. At times I wondered if she was being tongue-in-cheek, but there are other places where it seemed quite clear that she was dead serious. It's a modern review, not one of the original 1964 reviews. She is acknowledging right off the bat that Mary Poppins is a classic. She does say a lot of good things about it, but in doing so, she makes the point that it works for kids, not adults. I'll read a paragraph or two at a time, then pause, and then give my response. She begins, Mary Poppins is one of the most beloved movies of all time. The iconic classic was released around Christmas in 1964, and it's the gift that just keeps on giving. The film won 5 Academy Awards and has entertained generations of viewers with its charming characters and catchy musical numbers. All right, so far, so good. The problem is that she then goes on and says other things. A favorite with both fans and critics alike, Mary Poppins is a film many remember from their childhoods. Because of this, when you watch it as an adult, it can be easy to get caught up in the nostalgia and overlook some of the stranger parts of the film. It turns out that there are a lot of moments in this movie that go over your head as a kid. If you rewatch it as an adult, though, you might be surprised to see that the movie is actually a little bit darker than you remember. Here are some of the things you'll only notice in Mary Poppins as an adult. Bert seems to be everywhere throughout the movie. We see him at the beginning of the film performing as a one-man band for spare change. This seems to be a pretty meager way of making a living because Bert also has side jobs as a chimney sweep, sidewalk chalk artist, and kite seller. Is he just a free spirit who can't be shackled to a traditional job? Is he unqualified for a full-time position? Or is he taking on all of these extra jobs because he's having trouble making ends meet? Okay, I need to respond to some of this as we go. Bert. He wasn't portrayed that way at all. He came across as a man who loved and celebrated life, multi-talented, like a Renaissance man, but one who took pleasure in the little things and found the beauty in everything, including a spectacular view of London that only a chimney sweep will see. She goes on. When you watch this movie as a kid, you might envy Bert's nomadic lifestyle, but if you watch as an adult, suddenly Bert becomes an all-too-relatable character. Plenty of adults know the struggle of living paycheck to paycheck and the hardship of trying to find gainful employment in a troubled economy. Whatever Bert's reasons for having so many jobs, you definitely have to admire the guy's work ethic. All right, my friends, what we're supposed to admire about Bert is his love for life. She continues, it's pretty clear that homeowners associations weren't a thing in early 20th century London. How else can you explain the fact that the Banks family lives next to a delusional man who thinks his house is a ship? Turning the roof into a boat deck is more than just an eyesore, though. The captain actually regularly fires cannons, which causes the neighboring houses to shake. Why has no one reported this guy to the police? And how much damage have these cannonballs caused? They have to be landing somewhere, and considering that they're being fired in what appears to be a fairly densely populated area, it's safe to assume that there have at least been injuries, if not deaths, resulting from being hit by cannon fire. Surely there has to be at least one nosy neighbor who would have put a stop to this, right? It's hard to believe that the neighborhood is okay with their walls shaking every day because of a cannon-happy neighbor. Well, what can I say? This is a children's fantasy. Fantasy with eccentric, colorful characters. This character's name is Admiral Boom. Well, he wasn't a major character in the movie, including little sequences like these add to the brilliance of the story. She goes on. One of the more disappointing aspects of Mary Poppins that you notice when you're adult is the lack of strong female characters aside from Mary herself. When the movie came out in 1964, the women's liberation movement was just getting its start, but society's gradual acceptance of feminism isn't really reflected in the film. Well, yeah, maybe because the film, although it showed in the theaters in 1964, didn't take place in 1964. Mrs. Banks was still showed as a woman ahead of her time. Anyway, she goes on, Mrs. Banks is a suffragette fighting for votes for women, but her activism seems more like a source of comedy rather than an empowering stance. Mrs. Banks could have been a strong character, but instead she always defers to her husband. At times, it seems like she's downplaying her own intelligence in order to appease him. It's admirable that she marches for women's rights, but she doesn't follow through on her beliefs when she's at home. She doesn't even seem to take an active role in raising her children, leaving Mr. Banks in charge of hiring nannies for Jane and Michael. Okay, a response from your old pal Bob. In other words, here's her point. There are no strong female leads in this movie unless we want to count the heroine of the movie, who the movie is named after, Mary Poppins. But other than that, no strong female leads. As for Mrs. Banks, it was meant to be humorous and ironic. She marches for women's rights and then tells one of her house servants to put the protesting sign away. You know how the cause infuriates Mr. Banks. It was meant to be a laugh, but we are a generation that has forgotten how to laugh. She goes on. This one is probably noticeable to English children who grew up watching the movie, but most American kids were likely fooled. When you're a kid, Bert seems like a fun and totally believable Englishman with a Cockney accent. When you're an adult who's learned more about other cultures and countries, you realize that no one in real life talks like Bert. Bert's horrendous accent has been criticized in the decades since Mary Poppins was released, and even the actor who played him, Dick Van Dyke, acknowledges how awful it was. In 2017, Van Dyke received BAFTA's Britannia Award for Excellence in Television and used his acceptance speech to try to make up for his garbled accent. I appreciate this opportunity to apologize to the members of BAFTA for inflicting on them the most atrocious Cockney accent in the history of cinema, he said. It's not all his fault, though. While Van Dyke is American, he said that none of the British people working on the film said anything about his accent, so he never realized just how terrible it was. All right, I am forced to agree on this one, not because it bothered me personally. it didn't. I'm not up on what does or does not make an authentic Cockney accent, but she's not alone in her criticism of this. And as she says, Van Dyke himself admitted the problem and apologized. I can only say, who cares? It may not have been authentic, but he certainly sounded more English than American, bottom line. What about his brilliant dance numbers with the animated penguins and other places in the films and hilarious talent throughout the whole movie, not the least of which included portraying two different roles, not one? He was also the elderly president of the bank. She continues, it's well established throughout the film that Jane and Michael are full of mischief. They're not really bad kids, though. They're just acting out because they need love and attention. It's understandable, then, that they quickly become enamored with Mary Poppins, who guides them with a firm, gentle hand. What's not so understandable to adults in the audience is why they don't seem to question Mary's actual magic powers. But they do question her powers quite a bit at the beginning of the movie. Watch the looks on their faces as Mary Poppins slides up the banister and takes one large item after another out of her carpet bag, items that could not possibly have fit in there. And then Michael's trying to look inside the bag and figure it out. Yes, in time they accept her powers. Why not? They experienced them firsthand. She continues, Mr. Banks doesn't seem the sort to encourage his kids to believe in fairy tales. His no-nonsense attitude makes him seem more like the kind of dad who tells his kids the truth about Santa Claus when they're barely out of diapers. So it seems a bit strange that Jane and Michael aren't more skeptical when a woman literally flies in from the sky. Even Mr. Banks is weirdly mesmerized and doesn't question Mary Poppins when presented with evidence that she's wielding some otherworldly powers. Did the supernatural nanny cast a spell over the entire family? Did she slip something into their food? Or is the Banks family just so bored with their humdrum lives that they welcome any bit of excitement without blinking an eye? You might not think of it when you're a kid, but when you watch Mary Poppins as an adult, it seems strange that the movie does nothing to explain where she gets her powers from. She hasn't been bitten by a radioactive nanny that we know of, and doesn't have a magic wand that she casts spells with. In fact, she doesn't really acknowledge that what she can do is anything out of the ordinary, but instead acts like it's totally normal to be able to clean up a room by snapping your fingers. All right, folks. I did analyze this as a kid. As an adult, I felt the mystery was part of the charm. She goes on, are magical nannies just a common thing in the world of the movie? And where does Mary get her enchanted items, like her seemingly bottomless carpet bag and her magical tape measure? Is Mary Poppins a witch? It's actually a little frightening when you think about it. Mary worked her way into the Banks household by blowing away all the other applicants with a gust of wind. Just think of how much damage she could cause if she ever decided to use her powers for evil. But she didn't. She wasn't evil. And I need to remind you that much as I love philosophy and debate philosophy, children's literature made into movies was never intended for the empiricists or rationalists. René Descartes is not in the movie saying, I think, therefore I am. She goes on, to kids, Uncle Albert is a fun character. As an adult, however, he raises a lot of questions. He seems to be well known to Mary and to Bert, but it's not clear if he's actually anyone's uncle or if Uncle Albert is just an affectionate nickname. While he doesn't seem to have any magical powers, he suffers from an affliction that causes him to float to the ceiling when he laughs too much, something Mary does not approve of. Even stranger is that he appears to pass this illness on to other people laughing in his presence. Well, his ailment is probably pretty comical to kids, who of course would want to be able to float themselves. Adults can obviously see that Uncle Albert is actually a tragic character. He's very lonely, and the only thing that seems to be able to make him stop laughing is being told that it's time for Mary and the kids to leave. This not only makes him stop laughing and brings him back to the ground, but completely crushes him and reduces him to tears. Talk about overdramatic. Yeah, you can say that again. Talk about overdramatic, like overdramatic refuse. You said yourself he was a fun character. You started there. Couldn't you have stopped there? Uncle Albert, played by Ed Wynn, provides one of the most hilarious characters in the show. And all of us are sad when friends or relatives visit and then leave. That doesn't make him a tragic character, for Pete's sakes. She continues, There are a few scenes where we see that Mary Poppins isn't exactly the good-natured nanny she appears to be. She makes Uncle Albert cry, and instead of comforting him, she leaves him depressed and sobbing on the floor. She also gaslights the kids when they attempt to reminisce about the wonderful day they had with Bert in his sidewalk picture. She acts like the adventure never took place and gets a bit aggressive when Jane tries to jar her memory. What? When the kids continue to insist that they did indeed venture into a magical world where they participated in a horse race on carousel animals, Mary threatens to call the police if they don't stop talking about it. She's using her position of authority to make the children second guess what they know is true. She's probably doing it to prevent the kids from telling anyone about her magic powers, but it's actually kind of cruel to expose them to her powers if she's only going to act like they're delusional anytime they try to talk about it. That's messed up, Mary. Okay, I'll give her one. I think words like messed up are a little bit extreme, but I'm going to give her this one. Not the one about Uncle Albert, but the one about denying the sidewalk adventure. I did always find that strange and unfair to the kids. I did. So she gets a credit for that one. The review is still in a huge deficit, but at the moment, I just gave her a credit. Now hold on to your seat when you hear this observation. She says, Mary and Bert are both mysterious characters. Whoa, you think? Mysterious characters in a fantasy movie? Whatever could Walt Disney have been thinking? She goes on. We know very little about their backgrounds or their lives before they met the Banks family. It's evident they've known each other for quite a while, but just how well do they know each other? Kids might not pick up on the romantic tension between Bert and Mary, but to adults, it's all too obvious. While it's a little difficult to tell whether or not Mary reciprocates his feelings, Bert's affection for Mary is apparent. Are Bert and Mary secretly a couple, but hiding it from the children? Are they in love, but unable to be together for some reason? Or is Mary really just a heartless person who's toying with Bert's emotions and stringing him along just for fun? Maybe the real reason that Bert doesn't have a steady job is because he spends so much of his time pining over Mary. Get your priorities straight, Bert. Folks, the romance may have been left up in the air for a reason. It was not the heart of the story. Bert and Mary are still delightful together, whether as friends or somewhat more than friends. Who cares? She goes on. Mr. Banks tries to show his children the world by bringing them to work with him at the bank, but he gets a little bit more than he bargained for. To call the bank's practices shady would be an understatement. Poor little Michael has a little bit of money set aside that he wants to give to the woman who feeds birds on the steps of St. Paul's Cathedral. Mr. Banks doesn't think his son should waste his money caring for less fortunate people and insists that he instead invest his money by opening a bank account. Michael, being a child, doesn't want to do this, especially when he meets his father's boss, the chairman of the bank. The chairman demands that Michael invest his money and tries to grab it from his hands, not stopping even when Michael starts screaming. It goes without saying that this is a pretty terrible bank. The customers who are present when Michael is practically mugged agree. They all demand to withdraw their money, sending the bank into a full-on riot and leading to Mr. Banks being fired. My friends, it wasn't because they thought the bank was a gloomy place. It's because they heard that somebody couldn't withdraw their money and they thought people were withdrawing money like another depression and it caused a run on the bank. That's what actually happened. She goes on, how many kids watching this movie grew up thinking that banks were terrifying creep factories out to steal all their cash? Probably about all of them. Maybe. Or maybe kids are smart enough to know that this was just a movie comparing responsibility with the fun parts of life, the little things in life such as bird feeding, the gentle hobbies. At the heart and soul of this movie is a lesson that parenting is more than providing. It's about spending time with and enjoying our children. She continues, to children, Mary Poppins is a film full of whimsical delights. They're singing, dancing, magic, and bright, colorful characters. It's easy to overlook the grim setting when you're a kid. But as an adult, you realize that the London the Banks family lives in is actually pretty dismal. Everything there is dark and drab, and it frankly looks like a terrifying place to raise a child. The glimpses we get of London look like a post-apocalyptic wasteland rather than a bustling city. That is exactly the opposite of how it is portrayed. When Bert and Mary bring the kids on the rooftop, London looks like a wonderland. Incidentally, The movie was not filmed in London. London was beautifully painted on glass slides to give the semi-fantasy effect, and it worked strikingly. She continues, "It's no surprise that Jane and Michael often seem so unhappy. It looks like the only thing that brings joy to their world is Mary Poppins. But what's going to happen to the kids once Mary is gone? How long can their happiness last without her? Well, what's going to happen is a better relationship with their parents, the entire reason for Mary Poppins coming in the first place. So she leaves because she knows she's no longer needed." She goes on, "Will their dreary surroundings plunge them into an existential crisis without their magical nanny to lift their spirits? Probably. Time to get these kids into therapy." Really? Therapy? Gee, I'm wondering if a person who can't accept an enchanting fantasy without analyzing it to death regarding economics and sexual tension might be the one in need of some therapy. Not saying for sure, just throwing that out as something to consider. She goes on, "While it might seem like Mary Poppins is the star of the film, after all, it's named after her, Bert is the real MVP. He's the one who encourages Mary to take the kids on an adventure into the sidewalk chalk picture. He's also the person who drew the picture, creating the very playground Jane and Michael jump into." Yeah, but it didn't become magical and they couldn't jump into it without Mary Poppins, but it's okay. She goes on, "Bert is also there when Jane and Michael meet Uncle Albert and laugh themselves into the air. He also brings the kids to the rooftops of London and even gets his fellow chimney sweeps to put on a show for them. Mary often seems reluctant to use her powers to entertain the children, but Bert encourages her to use them. Later in the film, it's Bert who talks to Mr. Banks and makes him realize that he has emotionally neglected his children for years. Thanks to their conversation, Mr. Banks becomes a better father and husband. Mary should take some notes from Bert. He's the real star." Yes, Bert is a hero, but they were both the stars. His heart-to-heart talk with Mr. Banks took place only because he was defending the many things Mary Poppins was doing in her rapport with the kids. She goes on and says, "Then again, the movie probably wouldn't have been as memorable if it were just called Bert." Well, yeah, you got me there. Mary Poppins is a better name for Oofy than Bert. And then she concludes, "By the end of the movie, Mary Poppins has left, but it turns out to not be such a tragedy because Mr. Banks has been fired. Some people in this situation might worry about practical things like how they'll support their family, but Mr. Banks instead decides to finally spend time with his family. It's a heartwarming moment seeing Jane and Michael happy to be with their dad, but as an adult, you're likely to worry about the future of the family now that its breadwinner is unemployed. That fear is soon alleviated, though, because we soon find out that Mr. Banks' boss is actually dead. Now Mr. Banks is being rehired to take his place. The family's future is secured, but it's a bit disturbing when you realize that Mr. Banks actually killed his boss, who died while laughing at a joke Mr. Banks told him. While he's assured that it's a good thing the man died happy, it's still a pretty morbid way to end a children's film. Think of the lesson it teaches. Just remember, kids, don't laugh too hard. You might actually die." Oh, was that the message? Is that the message here? No, my dear, the lesson it teaches is that a brilliant movie like Mary Poppins is probably too quality of a film for today's audience. And in that vein, this is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.